Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Rick Alexander. Today I'm talking with one of my all-time favorite human beings, Dr. Danielle McGinnis, host of the Embodied Podcast. Danielle, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, so for the audience, I want to... Okay, so let me fill you in on a couple things that are going to be happening in the future here. So I'm making a commitment to do more long-form interviews. I want to explore the way that people are processing the world. And in that, I've decided that the only real structure I'm going to give the interviews is I'm going to have an icebreaker question and the final question. Everybody is familiar with the final morning coffee question. The new icebreaker question is going to be, what makes you feel the most alive right now? And you don't have to answer this at this exact second, because just to fill the audience in, you've launched the Embodied Podcast. And I was on episode 2 of it. And so a couple things there. First of all, it stretched me to my absolute max, like right out of the gate, basically, like to the absolute depth of my ability to comprehend a topic, we got there, which I thought was ballsy on episode 2. Like, I probably wouldn't have done that on my show, right? I told you that. I'm like, I've done 500, 600 episodes or something like that. But then, you know, also just in seeing the way that you have been inspired into these super deep topics in the last, I don't know, 6 months for sure. You know, like we've definitely all always resonated on a soul level in the work that we're trying to do in the world, but you've really like stepped into your own in the depth psychology space. And so as I was listening to you break down some of these and I was editing the podcast, I was realizing like, wow, your level of knowledge on the stuff that you're talking about is far beyond what I hear most people talking about in the world today, which I think is why it stretched me to my capacity to do that interview show with you. So all that to say, as I was doing that, I wanted to have you on so that we could explore some of that depth on my show as well. I was like, man, I hope I get an interview, you know, to promote this thing. And so, one, thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
And two, when do you feel the most alive right now?
I would say that sometimes you're up, but sometimes you're not. But the time I feel most alive is in the mornings when I get back from the gym and I have just like a quiet morning to really read and explore, whether that be about shadows or about the self or even reading the fairy tale book I got, like just truly diving into the depths of myself and asking myself questions as I explore these topics. That is probably when I feel the most alive, and it makes me really excited about kind of the future of where I might end up in that space. So yeah.
And what do you think it is about the morning? Is it the stillness or the fact that your mind isn't sort of corrupted by the world, or what?
Well, recently, probably about a month or so ago, like I made a personal boundary with myself and I said absolutely no work before 10 a.m. And for the longest time I just
work, like making money work,
no alpha femme before 10 a.m.
okay,
nothing,
right?
And so for the longest time I think that I was in this adversarial relationship with time, and I thought that if I wasn't ready, showered, dressed, ready to go to work by 9 a.m., I was already beating myself up at 8:30. And
during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, so
I haven't showered in 3 days. It's 8:30 and you have makeup on. I'm like, Jesus.
And so I think that giving myself the time and the space to slow down, and I think it is just I mean, we kind of got a pretty sweet setup outside on the deck, and just like being outside, hearing the birds, just really being at one with everything that I'm doing, the way that I'm being is, I don't know, it's really changed my day, the trajectory of my day. And also not starting my day in an adversarial relationship with myself is kind of a game changer.
What is it about this depth work that's like calling you forward?
You know, we kind of talked about this morning actually, but I feel like at some deep level I've had this kind of feminine wound that I don't even know if it's a wound, but I just really wasn't taught how to honor my feminine. And I feel like the feminine is, like we've talked about, down and in. And it's like the depths.
The energy is down in it.
Yeah. And I've always tried to make my life and my work up and out. And just try to perform. Like, performance has been my way of avoiding that down and in. And studying this depth psychology work has been the first thing in my life that has truly felt like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be when I'm working or studying or learning. It doesn't even feel like I'm like studying. It actually feels like I'm just like giving my soul a big hug when I'm reading this, honestly. Yeah.
Interesting. So, okay, let's break that down for the people that are, I think a lot of people think feminine and then they think female, like girl, right? But we're actually talking about like the sort of animating energies to life, masculine, feminine energies. And so let's talk about the difference, like let's talk about the characteristics just so people understand what we're talking about by down and in.
I think
if you don't get that concept, depth psychology is, you're not going to get it. You're not going to understand it.
Well, I think when you think of like the positive feminine, right, the good mother, it would be like this very held and nurturing energy that just feels really close to your heart and to your soul. And you know, the feminine energy can also be very chaotic, but in that chaos comes creativity. So I think that there is an element of that when I am studying this work too, because it's a type of psychology that isn't black and white, nor is it textbook. Like, the foundations of it are truly using your imagination to understand your human psychology or your trajectory of your soul's path. And so a lot of it is, it moves into the transpersonal space, and that for me stretches me to my limits. And so sometimes it does feel like chaos because I don't know where I'm at. But I think the best part of depth psychology is, as I'm studying it, I'm like, oh, being in the unknown to me doesn't feel terrifying. It actually feels like I can hold space for not knowing, and I can live in the gray, because a lot of PT school, not necessarily in the patient evals, but a lot of the information and a lot of the way that the education is directed is, you learn this material and you regurgitate it and you know it. And so that's not how this material that I'm like studying is at all.
We were listening to that creativity lecture by Jordan Peterson. He was like, so depth psychology is based off, I think it's based off the work of Carl Jung, right? Like, he founded the field essentially, and you know, as he broke away from Freud. And Jordan Peterson said, like, look, if you're not creative, like, depth psychology won't mean anything to you. Jungian psychology will just like be really abstract and hard to get your mind around. But if you do have a creative element to you, if your soul is a mix of chaos and art, then perhaps that Jungian psychology is a good way to start making sense of your life. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do, is you're making sense of, why do I feel this way? Why do I think this way? Why do I, all of it, right? All the questions about yourself you have.
I wouldn't even say why, like, because a lot of it, you're not understanding the why. It's like this,
you just experience the R, like the B.
Yeah, it's more of an experience, okay. Or Because I think that's the thing about death. It's like, you can look at it through a rational lens, but I'm so sick of looking at life through a rational lens that it's like, I keep running against my soul's wall when I use my rational brain. And I feel like when I get the most compliment and when people are like, oh, you're in your essence, it's not when I'm in a rational place. Actually, when I'm in a rational place, and you can probably like vouch for this, I'm more defensive and kind of closed off, and I don't really enjoy that side of me. And I feel like if I am exploring a little bit more and don't really know the why, I can be at more ease with myself. I'm softer.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think that the rational, like, life is so complex and weird and mysterious in a way that, like, the rational mind just, like, you know, why the Holocaust? Why the, you know, all these different things? It's like life is so fucked, you know, and so nuts that, like, the rational mind loses its ability to comprehend cause and effect, you know, quite early. You know, and we're trying to navigate our whole adult experience based on this cause and effect rationality. And I think it's leaving us wanting.
Yeah, and I think just as much as you can should yourself to death, you can definitely why yourself to death too.
Yeah.
And I think that that honestly takes you to places where you block your experience. And I think that the thing about depth psychology is interesting to me is because it builds this bridge between the imagination and the body, but it doesn't do it through like your rational human brain and your experience. You're learning to be in a way where you're using your body to experience the world, but it's not in this like structured, I don't, that's
hard to explain. So let's talk about embodiment. What is embodiment?
So how I define embodiment is using your body instead of saying that your body is an objective thing and just like that chair that you're sitting on is a chair. Your body isn't just a body. It's not just the servant to your mind. Your body is actually the thing that you're experiencing the world through. And so if you can use what's called the felt sense and start to connect your internal experiences to what you're experiencing externally, you start to have this embodied sense of being in the world. And so you're no longer this mind-directed machine. You're actually like this feeling and experiencing being. And it's way different when you start to live life that way. But to live life that way, and I know firsthand because I've been disembodied a lot, and I talked about it in episode 5 on the Embodied Podcast this week, actually. Sunday, I released a podcast about embodiment, and I feel like my main way to become disembodied was to perform. And so my body was constantly the slave to my experiences.
Totally. I think that's like a message you just get from our culture in some way. I mean, in the endurance world, which is the world that I've been in for kind of a while now, that's the deal, right? It's like you cut your mind off from your body, and if you can, then you're the victor. Like, if you can just keep going and crush it, and you can disconnect your thoughts in your head from what's going on below your neck, then you're the one that wins. And I think that, yeah, that does work for a bit, you know, like you said, until it doesn't.
Right.
And I just went through, I was going to do a solo podcast on it, but I just haven't been able to put it together yet in a thoughtful way. But just this idea that, like, my entire life, that's how I operate. It's how I operate in the military. It's how I operate in endurance sports. And when I got out of the military, it's like my whole body was like, fuck you, we're done. And so, and like, it's been such a gnarly job to try to figure out where I went wrong and rebuild that. And like, the grooves are deep too. So I'll start working out and I can feel my mind instantly want to just cut myself off from my body. It's like, no, stay with it. Like, stay with this pain, stay with all of it, stay embodied. And so, yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, that's just a shadow of our materialistic driven world and culture, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to navigate that. And then I think what's worth understanding about that is it's very limited in its capacity to help you experience the world, you know?
Well, I think that the word that I tell most of my clients in my Embodied Warrior program is honor. Like, what does...
That's like your training program?
Yeah. So, like, what does honoring your body look like to you? Mm. Because a lot of times, honor to somebody might mean just sacrificing your body.
Right.
And it's like, totally. Is that honor? Is that your definition of honoring your body? Because sometimes honoring your body means to slow down. And I tested this out when I trained for the Ironman this year. I was like, can I honor my body as I put myself through this immense task? And I feel like I did a really good job because I didn't feel broken.
Yeah. And at the same time, you felt the struggle too of that, like wanting to do
everything. Everything came to the surface. All of my toxic narratives about my body image, like that is why we stay disembodied, is because beneath the embodiment, we have to face everything that's like held in our nervous system. Mm. All the maps and all the grooves, like you said, of these wounded experiences are held in our body. And it's like, of course we would escape our body. It's not comfortable there until you make it comfortable there. You know, you're going to spend the rest of your human life in this body. Why wouldn't it be a good relationship? Why wouldn't you try to at least be in a good relationship?
I think in part because people don't understand that the body is sentient, that it is a feeling thing, that emotions and the world is experienced through, not with. Right. You know, I think as just a people, we just fuck that up and don't realize that. I think that, you know, for example, one of the things that you've been getting into a lot in this last year is looking at the way that trauma is stored in the body. Mm-hmm. And you read that book, A Body Keeps a Score, and sort of like started this whole... You went down this really big rabbit hole, like relearning about all of this. And it was interesting for me on the outside because, like, I've obviously, just like anybody else, experienced this. You know, if you move through the world long enough, you're going to experience trauma. And totally. So to realize that that trauma is stored in the body, and because it's in the body, it's stuck in the mind as well. You're stuck in that place. Actually, do you want to break that down for people? Because I do think that's something worth understanding. If you people that have never heard this posited before, it's a good way to understand yourself.
Well, I think that, you know, breaking down the difference between like the big T traumas and the little T traumas, like if you're a human, you're going to go through some traumatic experience. And so trauma is really just a disruption in your ability to cope with a stressor.
Like homeostasis.
Right.
Disrupted.
And so basically, when this trauma happens and then your body is not given the chance to move through this traumatic experience, I'm not going to go into like the neurophysiology of it, but like if you feel like you were frozen in a state of trauma, that's going to be stored in your system. And so there's different ways that you can work with a somatic experience practitioner or a therapist to kind of like work on that. But you have to realize that that trauma is past tense, and staying present and teaching yourself slowly and gently over time that you are safe in the present moment. And so I know that we've talked about this in the past where it's like, you know, the personal development space is like, get out of your comfort zone. And it's like, also, if you're going to do anything meaningful in the world, you have to have some form of psychological safety and physiological safety.
Right.
To stay grounded in yourself. And so just to escape yourself, just to like get something done, is not necessarily the smartest thing, because it's probably going to manifest into some physiological symptoms down the line if you right. continue to do that.
Right.
And that could be panic attacks. That could be anxiety, it could be, you know, chronic pain, a number of things that could manifest physiologically. But so just understanding like your response, like slowly understanding what's your triggers too, like what shifts your body into out of homeostasis. What makes you anxious? What makes you move towards that fight or flight state? Also, what are the things, what are the, just gaining awareness around when you tend to distract? Like, what are you doing when you're distracting? Like, even watching TV at the end of the night could be a distraction from getting in your, getting in your body. Like, you had a long day at work and you're just like, oh, I'm just going to watch TV. And it's like, not that you should sit in your trauma all day, every day, but it's like, if you're always avoiding it, learning to have awareness around how you avoid it can help you be compassionate when you're working through it.
Yeah, and I think that's the distinction, that what you're saying, that's why it matters, right? It's not, because people are like, I just got to get over it. It's like, no, you actually have to work through it, and those are different things completely.
Totally.
And you're trying to repress it, and it's not working.
And I think that it's really, it is, I think, important to have somebody to help you work through it, because your body is basically thinking that there's a threat, right? Your arousal levels are signaling to your brain threat. And so if you can have somebody to help you regulate yourself, I think that will kind of help the experience. But if it's somebody that can't regulate themselves and they're trying to help you regulate yourself, I think you can set yourself up for some toxic patterns that could manifest. So I think just really noting on, you know, who makes you feel safe, you know, and maybe that is a therapist, or maybe that's a coach or a somatic practitioner. But help put surrounding yourself with those people to kind of feel safe in your essence.
Yeah. The tough thing is when you're, you know, when you have a partner that, you know, triggers you in some way and probably makes you feel like, sometimes I think that sometimes these couples that have trouble, like, getting, usually it's the guy that can't open up, you know, well, he probably doesn't feel safe. There's probably something you're doing that's triggering him, that he was, that happened when he was younger, that his parents did to him or something, you know, not always, but it's just coming to grips with the fact that that's a thing that happens, that you can create an unsafe environment where people don't open up, and that causes all of its own sort of problems. So becoming aware of this stuff is just helpful for navigating life.
Yeah, I think, like, in partnership, that's one of the most important things that you could do, is work on regulating yourself while your partner is going through something. Because if your partner's going through something, and I know that I am definitely guilty of this sometimes, you make it about you. That teaches your partner that, one, they can't be vulnerable with you because you can't hold space for it, and two, like, their experience doesn't matter as much as yours.
That's like the unconscious thing you're sending them.
Yeah, message. And that can be the, I guess, the downfall of projecting shadows onto each other. But I think that, you know, there's been so many times when it's not intentional, but for me growing up, emotions weren't a thing that were, there wasn't a lot of space for emotions to exist. They were avoided a lot. And so when you experience something and you're emotional about it.
Me in particular.
Yeah, you. It's sometimes hard for me because I have a hard time expressing my emotions and my needs for myself, let alone another person. And so I have to consciously remind myself, like, what is, like, grounding myself in the present moment and saying, like, what is truly going on, not attaching a story to it immediately, because that's, like, the first thing that I would do. And then maybe doing some, like, breathing techniques to try to, like, calm myself and just truly stay in this state where I can stay connected and I can stay curious and I can understand. If you're telling me something, if I'm, like, curious and connected to you, I'm not making it about me. I'm truly trying to learn about your experience. And so I think that's, you know, a really important aspect of regulation and co-regulation.
Totally. And I guess I didn't really plan on talking about, like, you know, couple relationship type stuff, but those feed off of each other. And so if you're not, right, so if you're not able to express how you feel, then you're going to want to express how you feel when your partner's trying to express how they feel, because you feel not seen. And so it creates this like negative feedback loop where you're both, you know, it's kind of an ego pursuit, and you're both like trying to be seen over each other.
That book I was reading, they're calling it shadow boxing, basically.
Yeah, okay.
And so the goal is, once you start to romance your shadow a little bit, it turns into shadow dancing. It's not shadow boxing. And so you're not just constantly throwing projections back and forth to each other. You don't start blaming and criticizing and putting your partner in contempt and all of these different things that we do. You actually are dancing, and so you are adapting to whatever your partner is throwing at you, and then, you know, your partner dances. And but with that comes a space of vulnerability, and so both partners have to be willing to know that they could have some unconscious things that are being brought up,
right?
And like accepting their shadows and doing the shadow work. Because if one person's doing shadow work and then the other person isn't, that can get there can be like resentment growing there, and it can get frustrating too. And so it's no longer a dance, it's like kind of control.
I mean, really, like if you're gonna go into the depth, like into the underworld, like you really gotta have your partner wanting to go there too.
Totally.
Because you're going to create a really terrible situation for both people involved. Like, you're going to be trying to force them into a depth they're not ready for. And, you know, they're going to be trying to pull you. They're going to sabotage your exploration.
Also, like, I think it's important to know that, like, your experience, you.
Me again in particular.
Yeah. Your experience doesn't have to be the same as my experience at all times, you know? Like,
totally.
Right now, I think you're going through something and you're not really sure what it is. But, you know, in the past, my codependent ways would pull me in the depths of the underworld with you.
Mm.
And that tells you that I don't trust you to figure out your shit for yourself.
Right.
And so I think the way that you actually can build resiliency in your relationship is trusting that your partner is truly looking out for his or her best interest.
Yeah.
And also taming your own shadows to know that, like, you can't control their experience.
Or fix them, or right.
Right. And so, like, if they go into the depths of the underworld and they come out and they don't want to be with you, that has nothing to do with you. It might, but it doesn't.
Right.
You know, it's, you have to be accepting of whatever is the result of their journey. If you literally just held space and you were there and you were present, it has nothing to do with you.
It couldn't, right? It couldn't possibly. I mean, we in our culture, like, that's another thing I think that culturally we're convinced of, which is like, somebody doing something on their own says something about us. And it's like, no, if they're doing something on their own, that says something about them and what they're doing, not you. But it's inevitably, it always comes back to like, what's wrong with me? Where am I broken? Where am I not adequate? Where am I? Maybe you're just not for them.
Well, also, it's like, if you're focused on what about that person makes you feel that way, take that person out of it. And just ask yourself, like, what makes me feel that way?
Because
if you're focusing externally on somebody else making you feel a certain way, like, get curious about those.
Yeah, because then you're just scapegoating your problems.
Right.
Right.
And I think that it's really important that you take some time to not focus externally, and that is a form of disembodiment.
Yeah.
Projecting all of your, like, victimizing yourself and projecting all of your life's problems on somebody else, a job, whatever it may be, is a form of escaping your body. Not intentionally, we don't do it consciously, but I think that is maybe a sign that you could turn inwards.
Right.
And get comfortable with you.
I think that's what makes all this stuff so tough, is like you're not, you know, doing anything for the most part. Like most of the things that we do that hurt each other, you know, we're not trying to as much as we're just trying to live in the world with a kind of broken wing, you know, and we're just like coping and doing it in weird ways, and that's causing more and more pain, unfortunately.
Right, but I think that, you know, when it comes to your individuation path, you know, your path back home to your soul, it's gonna take you hitting some brick walls and experience some rock bottoms. And
can you talk about that word? I haven't talked about that word with audience either. What's individuation?
So individuation is what Jung called the process of, you're basically reorienting your personality from an egocentric personality into a true self-centered personality, and self as representing the totality of who you are, the soul and the essence of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so individuation is the process that takes place throughout your whole life. And please don't think that individuation means it's somewhere to get, because you're either going to escape this life on the process of individuation or enlightened. And so you're probably just going to continue this process until you die.
Right.
But individuation, the whole point of it is you're stripping yourself from attachment of the ego, and you start to view your life in a way that holds space for the mystery. And the ego hates that so much.
Totally. Like the show I released on Monday definitely like talked about that idea that like the ego you is in this finite world where things come to an end, and you know that. And so anything that's uncertain presents the opportunity for it to come to an end. And so the ego inherently wants to control all of those things. And so now we have this rising anxiety rate because people are trying to control a life that is altogether uncontrollable. Totally. Or to look like they're in control of it.
Yeah, Jung had a quote that was like, a step towards self is always a defeat for the ego.
Mm.
But also understanding that we're not defeating parts of ourselves. We're truly, I look at it as a more integrative process, and I think that's the way that my business has shifted. Instead of, you know, participating in this medical model that's very like therapist-patient, like doctor-client, you know, it really puts a gap between the healer and the person being healed. And I think that if we look at healing in its essence, it is an integrative process, and it's a process I'm also going through.
Mm.
And so I can understand my woundedness and hold space for the person that I'm helping integrate their woundedness.
Mm. You know, something that it's like a thing I've been grappling with in the last couple of weeks, like an idea that's emerged that I found at the bottom of religion. Specifically, it's also at the bottom of the work you're talking about right now, is the idea that one of the things, you know, if you are religious, if you have some kind of religious practice, one of the things that you take on faith is the idea that nothing good can truly die, right? And so what death does in that scenario, if nothing good can die, then what death does is take away everything that's not serving you any longer, right? And so you could think about that with an ego death as well, right? It's like you're not defeating yourself, no, right? But the way that we continue to evolve is we transcend but include. So we include what's good. Nothing good can die. Death brings away, gets rid of everything else, right? And so whether you're talking about like finality and death in the religion, you take on faith the fact that nothing good can die. That, you know, the part of you that is in God will continue on. And then at the same time, as you're navigating your own life, there comes times constantly, more often, I think, I was thinking maybe like twice a lifetime, but I'm thinking like once a week, where your identity just has to like take a hit. But
maybe
not,
that's just but it's me not, mirroring that, like us being with each other.
Right, right. Either way, though, like ego death is something that happens sporadically throughout life. And it's something you can get better at. But what's actually happening in an ego death is it's not the good parts of you that are dying. You know, that's what gets included. That's what goes on. Death brings away what's not going to serve you going forward. And so to just be open to that fact, that what's good continues on. That at least allows you to have some faith in the whole process.
Yeah.
Not starting over, ever. Well,
if you look at through a depth psychology lens, a lot of these Jungian analysts are saying that, you know, the first half of your life is all about building your ego and figuring out who you are.
Right.
It's shaping your personality. And the second half of your life is truly just taking all of that away and figuring out who you were before you, like, built this personality.
Right. Right.
Built this ego. And so if you are in your, I mean, I'm in my 20s still, you know, I'm 28. But I feel like I'm, like, going through this process maybe a little bit before, like, a midlife crisis.
Well, they say 28 is actually the time.
Oh, cool.
Right.
I
was 31. So it's like, what do they call it? Like, return to Saturn or something? So that,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah.
In astrology, yeah.
Yeah, in astrology, they say, like, around 28. It's like every 7 years you go through some evolution, which is fascinating because biologically your cells are sort of turning over in that time frame as well.
Yeah, but
so around 28, you're...
Yeah, like, so typically people get hit with this midlife crisis. And, you know, often at that time, you're changing roles. Maybe your kids are moving away to college. Maybe you're experiencing menopause. Maybe, you know, you're experiencing this change in your job that it's no longer fulfilling. And I think that our attachment to those things can be the most painful part of it. That's what causes the suffering, is our attachment to our children or our attachment to our jobs, like our identities in that place. And I think that what individuation does is it presents us with a number of opportunities to just get closer to our soul's essence without the attachment of human things. So yeah. There was something else I was going to say about that, but I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, and so that soul's path, that idea, that's, you know, at the end of the day, where meaning is in your life, you know?
Yeah, and I think that you're never going to find that path unless you slow down and get quiet.
Yeah. See, I don't think, you know, because I've wondered about this quite a bit. Like, can people be anything? Like, I don't think so, right? Like, I couldn't be an accountant. My soul would die. So you couldn't be anything. The difference is, though, when you get clear and you let go of the egoic desires and the world strips away the bullshit, when you get to the soul's path, it's like the thing that you figure out is the thing that you want to do and the thing that you're supposed to be doing are the same thing, because that's where your meaning is.
Yeah, so I'm really excited.
So you can follow interest to that place is what I'm saying.
I'm really excited because from a depth lens, that's how they view your work in the world, is that it is just an extension of your soul.
Mm.
And that makes you really excited because I'm like, oh, I finally can have permission to be, like, in my essence when I actually do work in the world.
And to use language that, like, right, because that's the thing. Like, you could talk around it, but at the end of the day, like, we are talking about soul work. And so if you don't accept soul work as a thing that could be happening in the world in your life, then you don't have words and you can't go do it, you know?
Well, I mean, if you're still rejecting soul work and you have looked at 2020, and obviously we have some problems. Mm. They're pretty evident.
Yeah.
I think what the collective needs is soul work.
Right.
And I think that the reason why there are so many problems in the collective is that we are neglecting soul work. And so I think it is just a matter of time before we start to realize what we've always needed to do.
Right, sure. So this morning we were talking about your model for one-on-one coaching. I just thought that was super fascinating, so I wanted to explore that. Just because if people don't work with you, right, but if they're listening to the show, they probably have some interest in their own depth. So I love the model that you laid out.
So my long-term vision and goal is to offer, so I've stepped away from physical therapy, and stepping away from that does not mean shedding all of the knowledge that I have gained throughout that doctoral program, because I think that is invaluable. And so I want to use all of that clinical experience to truly offer one-on-one coaching to individuals that does meet people where they're at. And I want to, long-term vision of Alpha Femme, like, I don't know what COVID is going to look like, but I would love to have, you know, the one-on-one in person and implementing all of these depth practices and then somatic practices, and then also having group programs online to support that.
So, but what is the actual model for, like, setting an aim and that you're, like, using to work through? Because I think this is what we do, is we set goals that don't mean anything to us, and or they mean something to the world. And then we just find ourselves mired in the distress of trying to get to these goals that don't really mean anything to us. And it's just such a, you know, it's like our push-pull relationship with the animating forces in our life is just completely fucked because we don't know what we actually want. So you always talk about starting with an aim.
So my, I guess my ultimate vision for a coaching practice is to really help individuals, one, locate where the heck they're at in their life. And so where are you? What's not working for you? What is working for you? What do you desire? What's your relationship to emotions? What's your relationship to relationships? Like, all of these things. Like, where are you right now?
Yeah.
And then setting an aim that is as much as we consciously can do is set an aim with your positive emotions and you're accessing your positive emotions and your desires in order to have a North Star to move towards. And then that process of moving towards that North Star is really going to look like regulating your nervous system and learning that path, and also unlearning all of these complexes that we've built over time. So it's like we know where we're at, we have an aim, and now as we walk forward, what we're going to be doing is we're literally just shedding our skin like a snake. And you're truly just moving towards that North Star, what you desire, what you truly want for your life. And a lot of people don't give themselves permission to even imagine that, but that is what I desire to do with depth psychology, is to use all of those principles of imagination and creativity to help people access those parts of their soul that truly are speaking to them. They just might not realize it at this point. But, you know, in that process, I think that, you know, as you're shedding your skin and you're moving towards that North Star, there's going to be times where you do truly feel like you are flat on the ground, can't move any longer. Like, it, you've really, truly, like, released all of the things that you've held on to. And that's a scary place to be. And I think that that is a place where coaching, if it is done well, can truly help individuals finish that integration process. Because I think you do heal in relationship, but if the relationship is pushing you beyond your healing capacity, I think it could push you back a little bit where you're not moving forwards. And I think that it, my ultimate goal is to, you know, foster a therapeutic relationship, but do it in a coaching space.
So yeah, well, I think you're gonna nail it.
Thanks.
So, okay, great. One thing I wanted to add before I get to the final question is, you know, worth considering if you're listening to this show, is like, I think that the decision that you have to make before you make those decisions, before you ask yourself those questions, is that you're not going to lie about them, that you're going to be truthful with yourself about how good or how awful or how meh or how in the middle or like whatever your life is. Own it from that place, you know, be real honest. Like, maybe you make a lot of money, but it just isn't working for you. Like, that is, that's a real thing that happens to people constantly, you know. Maybe, like, for me in the military, it's like my identity's in this thing, I make good money in this thing, I do get a sense of meaning and purpose from this thing, and it's still not working for me. Like, be honest with yourself about that. And then you can start to reconstruct and figure out, okay, well, then what is it that's not working? But I think that, at least for me, I know I had to consciously tell myself that there was no more suppressing, repressing whatever I find, whatever I think, whatever comes up when I'm journaling. That's what I'm going to go with. End of story.
Well, I think another important thing to add there is that that's why it's so important for whomever you hire to help you through this process, that they have done the work. Because when you are not being honest with yourself and then someone judges you for it, for sure it's going to be harder to pull that out of repression.
Yeah. Right, right.
You're going to hold on to it and cling to it even more. And so I think that there's this gentle relationship that must exist. And honestly, for me, I wouldn't hire someone that's going to be a yes person if you truly want to change your life. Sometimes the people that unconsciously trigger us the most are going to be the people that are going to open our eyes. And I am not saying that to say that like a coach that is like really toxic that triggers you, but I'm saying a coach that brings up some truth. And I had this with the person that has been my coach over the last year. You know, it's like, oh gosh, I don't agree with that. But it's like, I don't agree with that because there's something within me that needs to be worked through with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that pay attention to what you get triggered by when people say it, because that is an invitation of growth. And so, yeah, that's what I wanted to add about that relationship.
Yeah, 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 because that is true. Like as a coach, you know, mentee-mentor dynamic, that they have to have gone through it and have to be able to hold space for you to go through it. And like you said, if they have their own preconceived notions, judgments, or expectations for how you should handle it, the reason you're repressing it in the first place is just added to.
Right, and so basically you're hiring your parent.
Right. <Yeah.
laughs> And so I, that's another thing with, you know, my healing methodologies is, it's uncomfortable for some people to go through some programs and some coaching that I do because I don't fix it for you. Mm. And I can sit in your uncomfortable moments. And I'm not going to like, you know, I can give you some tools and strategies to help you be more comfortable.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to give you strategies to put a Band-Aid on. We need to figure out like what is working for you.
Right.
And so that is something that kind of people don't really like that. And you know, it's hard to sell a business where it's like, well, I'm not gonna fix you, I'm gonna basically do everything that everybody else promises to do. I'm gonna right. do the opposite of that.
Right.
But just knowing that you can actually fix yourself, and that is a way more empowering way to heal, and it gives you more strength in the end, I believe.
Totally. Most people probably know this that are listening to this show, but before we get into the final question, how can people support you, follow along with you, or inquire about coaching, or reach out?
So at dbird20 is my Instagram, or you can go to iamalphafem.com. We have all of our coaching options on there. And like you said, I just launched my The Embodied podcast. Mm-hmm. We're on episode 5. So now you can get it on Spotify and Apple. So yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So if you could have morning coffee with anybody in the world that are alive, who would it be and what would you want to talk about?
Man, this isn't a bragging point, I promise. But you asked me this question last year and I said Danielle Laporte. And I actually just interviewed Danielle Laporte yesterday for the Embodied podcast, so manifesting AF. So yeah, guys, go subscribe so you can listen to that episode. So now I have to change my answer because I don't want to have coffee with Danielle Laporte now. I would love to, but honestly, this sounds nuts and it sounds crazy, but I would love to have coffee with Persephone, the goddess of the underworld.
Oh, good one. Mythical. Great. The mythical route.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Somebody who's a seasoned traveler in and out of the underworld. That's a great one.
Yeah, she spends a season in the underworld and then comes back up to the top side. Mm. I think that is just the true embodiment of an, you know, integrated human. So, not that she's a human, she's a goddess, but I would love to kind of like hear about the journey to the depths because I love to read books about it. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me and for opening and just sort of sharing your work and expertise with my audience.
Thanks for having me, babe.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.